Just say the name Costco and the image is of a company that remains a remarkable success story. It is, depending on whose stats you use, the second largest retailer in the U.S., the seventh largest retailer in the world, and the largest membership warehouse club chain in the U.S. It's got 632 locations around the world, including more than 450 here in this country. Costco is the anti-Walmart, the chain that pays its employees well and provides health insurance despite the grumblings of some shareholders. The theory, a better-paid employee is a happier employee and one more inclined to help customers. Co-founder and former CEO Jim Senegal was in town to receive an honor as the 2013 International Entrepreneur of the Year at the Block School of Management at UMKC, and he stopped by our studios to visit. And I should point out that I am a Costco member. In fact, I'm number 841-22495-0000, Jim Senegal, and welcome to Up to Date. So good to have you here.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be here.
You're crazy about the hot dog still after all these years.
How could I not be?
You know, yeah, what do you like about them?
Well, $1.50, and it's a great hot dog. It's larger than a quarter pound, and it comes with a drink, and it's a delicious all-beef dog. So, and it stayed $1.50 for the last 30 years.
I was going to say, it's been a buck and a half for a long time, right? Just the way you want it to be.
Exactly.
What do you say to shareholders, Jim, who buy your stock to achieve, you know, a maximum return on their investment, and they question why you pay your employees $17 an hour and you also buy them health insurance? What do you say to them?
Well, I tell them, first of all, that it's actually about $21 an hour.
Is that what it is now? Yeah.
And we have a very rich plan in healthcare. But in our view, you get what you pay for. I mean, if you buy the premise that Costco is the low-cost provider of goods, and I hope you'll buy that premise, and if we're able to pay the highest wages and still make a profit and be very productive, then we must be getting very productive numbers out of the people that we're hiring. And I think that probably is the case.
So you get what you pay for. Do you know that to be a fact? You pay your people better, you get more out of them?
Well, we believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, to say anything, you know anything absolutely for a fact, but we think we've proven that if you pay good wages and if you turn your inventory faster than you turn your people, that you're going to get good results.
You know, how often do you still hear complaints from shareholders about just what we're talking about here?
Well, we used to hear it a lot, certainly in our formative years in the first 10 to 15 years that we were open, and even a smattering of that over the last 10 years. But it's grown somewhat distant because our returns have been so high for our shareholders. If I were to take you back in time, we went public about 27 years ago, 28, almost 28 years ago. And in that period of time, over that 27 to 28 years, our sales have grown at about a 13.7 compounded rate annually. Our profitability has grown at about a 13.9 compounded rate annually. And our stock has grown over 17% on a compounded rate. That's a pretty good return, and we think that that's rewarding the shareholders pretty well.
It's worked. Why, Jim? At the end of the day, why has this thing taken off the way it has?
Well, because we think it's a compelling story. We think that when we're doing our thing right, when we're really providing great value on great merchandise and great products and services for our members, we're a very compelling place to shop with. And there are no annuities in this business. You got to keep doing it every single day and not become boring and tired. If you do, the customers will elect not to show up. And so we're very conscious of the fact and recognize the evolution of retail businesses that you got to stay sharp constantly.
At the end of the day, Jim, it's a warehouse. So why does it work? What's the secret? What's the magic?
Well, that may be part of the mystique, you know, that people come in and see the warehouse. It's open beam ceilings, it's cement floors, it's steel racks where we're putting the merchandise.
And they're all the same over the country, right?
And we treat them all the same. As a matter of fact, you know, we spend a tremendous amount of time dealing with cities on getting it to look as much like a plain box as we can. And I've joked because it takes so long sometimes to get projects done. At a recent shareholder meeting, I joked and said it costs a lot of money to make these places look cheap.
So. But you want them to look the same. Why? Why is that important?
Well, because it's part of the image. The image is that it's a warehouse type of operation. And by the way, there are lots of buildings that we had to retrofit that don't look exactly like the ones that you may be seeing here in the Kansas City area.
Maybe like the first one, the airplane hangar, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the first one down in San Diego. And
okay.
There's
several
others across the country. And actually, those are kind of fun to merchandise because you have to do some different things to merchandise them. The others are simple because it's easy to build them the same, and you save a tremendous amount of money on construction and architectural fees.
When you built the first one in the state of Washington, how soon did you know that this whole idea was going to work and work pretty darn well?
Well, when we raised the money, we expected to be able to open three places with the money that we had raised. And so we did. We opened up in Seattle and Portland and in Spokane, Washington, Portland, Oregon. And it was on a return trip from Portland at that opening, which opened about 40 days after the Seattle warehouse. When I halfway back to Seattle, I called the office to see what the sales were at 3 o'clock. And the number was significant enough at that point that I really felt, and believe it or not, I've told this story before, I really felt at that point we made it. We absolutely have made it, that we're going to be successful here. And why I felt so confident at that particular moment, I can't tell you other than I felt good at that.
You hung out, I assume, at those stores early on and spent time with customers watching and observing. Do I have that right?
Oh, absolutely.
And what did you see in those early days that, again, made you feel good about things?
Well, we knew that our pricing was good. We had been out checking enough of the competition to know that the pricing was good. And on the opening day in Seattle, I can remember that one of the local TV channels was interviewing a woman. She was a woman that was probably in her early 40s, very attractive customer who was there. And they were questioning her about the prices. And she said, well, I had my list and I started checking prices. But after a while, I threw away the list, she said, because they were lower on every single item. Well, I could have kissed the woman. It was just a tremendous endorsement from a customer who clearly had done her homework before she arrived there. So we felt good from that moment on, but obviously there's a long distance between feeling good and being successful.
We're visiting with co-founder and former CEO of Costco, Jim Stenegall. He was in town on Monday. You know, I'm told that you have visited and do visit every single Costco at least once a year. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Well,
at least
I try
you used to.
I try to get into every one of them. Some of them are difficult, and so obviously you have to carve out enough time to get to Hawaii and enough time to get to Puerto Rico and enough time to get to Anchorage, Alaska, and some of the more distant places. But it's our effort to get in, and as a management team, it's our effort to get into these places as frequently as possible. So I would say that over 200 days a year, we're spending visiting our warehouses.
What are you looking for?
Well, we try to take the same viewpoint that we think a customer does when they walk in. How does the place look?
Mm-hmm.
What are they seeing? What are we projecting to them when they're walking through the door? And, you know, is the place clean? Does it have the right merchandise up in the front of the building? Are we really telling a story of quality and of value and of seasonality? Every time they walk in the building, is the building safe because we have an unusual environment? And you've done this, if you've done this as many times as I have, for as long as I have, you can pretty much tell the story in the first 100 feet or so.
That's interesting.
You know whether or not you're really going to be pleased with what you see there.
And is one store really that much different from the next? I mean, isn't everyone displaying the same welcoming merchandise as you first walk in the door there?
Well, not always, no. As a matter of fact, we want our managers, one of the things that we insist upon with our warehouse managers, the general manager, is that they be good merchants.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not trying to give them schematics and that they all have to look the same. We want them to be using their imagination and creativity when they're merchandising the buildings. That's the sex appeal of the business. You know, the administrative part is the grinding out every day, but the mm-hmm. merchandising of the building is the part of the business that's fun. And to be successful in our business, you got to be a pretty good merchant. You got to have a feel for the merchandise and having the right stuff at the right time and at the right price.
Jim, do people recognize you when you walk into a Costco ever?
They do. I mean, most particularly if they start playing some of those programs they've had on television relative to Costco. I think CNBC did a program on us, and at recent openings, they seem to have flooded the market with that program. So I do get a lot of recognition for that reason. Hey, customers come up and they talk, and I love it. I mean, I love to hear them talk. They all have something positive to say about Costco, and it's good to know that you have people who are performing so well out there in the warehouses, because those are the people that are doing the job. I'm just taking all the bows.
What do the employees say when they find out boss man's in the house?
Well, it certainly gets their attention.
I bet it does. I can only imagine.
But I think generally they enjoy seeing all of us. They enjoy seeing the management of the company coming through. It's a pretty good indication that we think they're important, and that I think that they would rather see us than not see us. Now, there may be on certain occasions where they wish we would get out a little faster. But generally speaking, we get a very positive reaction from our employees, and we love to see them. So,
hey, are you giving them feedback even on site when you're there?
Of course.
Right away, I noticed this is good. I have questions about this.
Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. We tell our managers that any manager, if they don't recognize that teaching is the most important thing they do and it's 90% of their job, they don't get it, because that's why you hire someone else, because you can't do all the work, and you better be spending the time teaching them to do it just as you would do it if you were able to take care of every customer.
How do you approach that? You walk in and maybe the entryway to the store might be a little dirty. What do you say? How do you approach that?
Well, the first thing, if it's a little dirty, you would tell them to clean it up, and mm-hmm. probably in very simple terms.
Yeah.
But in addition—
Very directly, sounds like.
Of course. But in addition, you're talking, if teaching doesn't have to always be something formal in a classroom— Teaching can be just something as simple as picking up a piece of paper off the floor that they see and recognize that, gee, we want to keep these places clean.
Yeah.
And so that ongoing process is very important.
Jim, I read that you mentioned once in an interview that you visit your competition, Sam's Club, at least once a week. I mean, are you still doing that even though you're the former CEO? And what's the biggest aha moment you experienced while shopping at a Sam's?
Well, yes, the answer is yes, I still do it. And the answer is I will probably do it next year as well. And I enjoy going in to see competitors. Good competitors make you better. And I think if you were to ask them, they would say exactly the same thing. That in a perfect world, you look and say, gee, I wish all the competitors were gone. Then we wouldn't have to worry about anything. But in truth, you'd become very sloppy in terms of your operation. Competition keeps you on your toes and keeps you moving in the right direction.
The biggest complaint about these warehouse types of businesses, and you've heard this a lot, is that you're taking the mom-and-pop operation, you're taking Main Street and really taking them right out of business. What do you say to that?
Well, it's generally speaking, when we enter a community, we get support from the businesses in a community. We don't have people having protestations about our entering the business, because in many instances, those are our most important customers. Those are the people who are buying merchandise from us to satisfy the needs of their own business. And so we generally have a very good relationship with small businesses. We support them, and we think they're certainly an important part of what we do and the revenues that we generate, and we think we help them run their business better.
But still, Main Street America, the quintessential view of it sure as heck isn't what it used to be. With Walmarts, with Costco's, that, Main Street has changed. And it's not as robust and healthy as it used to be. And a lot of folks say it's you guys that did it.
Well, I bet if you recall, before us, it was the supermarkets that did it. And before that, it was – or right after that, it was the super hardware stores that did it and home improvement stores that did it. So there's always some – there's always going to be progress. I mean, just as you don't see many of the one-screen theaters anymore, you see multiplex screens. It's a change in lifestyle. It's the way we've evolved as a society.
You know, the Kansas City location is interesting to me, at least the one in Midtown Kansas City. That property, when you first came in, had been blighted for a long time. There was a big effort under something called the Glover Plan after a city councilman here to sort of redo this part of Midtown and revitalize it. And the Costco property was one of the key ingredients to that change, Jim. Do you recall anything about the opening of that particular store, and if you felt like you were taking a bigger gamble on that property than you might have somewhere else?
No, I don't think we considered that too big a gamble. It was our entry into the marketplace. We liked the location. We liked most particularly the proximity to businesses, because our business members are still our most important members. They still buy a lot of things that they use in their business. And so that was attractive from that standpoint. And we had no illusions that it was going to be easy. We're entering a new market, so that, you know, you got to be putting your best foot forward, and you got to win the customers over one customer at a time.
And again, with that property, maybe this is too specific a question because you have so many properties, but how quickly did you realize, okay, this one's going to work? Do you have any memory of that at all?
You know, I would say that relative to that, shortly after we opened the downtown unit, we opened up in Lenexa, and we opened up in Overland Park, and subsequently in Independence. And about the time that we were opening Lenexa and Overland Park was obviously we would not have continued with those projects if we didn't see something relative to the performance of downtown that told us, yes, we can be successful in this market. So we'd gotten the tale and, you know, gotten the story from what we saw in the numbers. And by the time we opened, we felt pretty comfortable with it.
What are you looking for before you open any one store? How do you know any one site is potentially going to work for Costco versus some other site?
Well, we're looking for something that's accessible. We don't have to be on the corner of Main and Main, but we do want to look at something that's fairly easy to get to. And clearly, because we're a warehouse type of operation, we try to get something that's as inexpensive as we can possibly get it. And then we have to also look for something that we know the communities are going to buy into relative to the type of project we're going to put on there, and then we're going to get all the adequate facilities and space that we need and require for our total project. And we scour the market. We typically look for high-end markets, and the reason we do that is that despite the fact that it's a warehouse, and you might think, well, this is probably a bargain-hunting customer that's at the lower income levels, it's a higher income level. And we find that if you look and think about the people that own and run businesses, they're always at the top end of the demographic scale. So we try to get as close to them as we can.
Was that a surprise when you first began this business that you do attract a higher end type of customer than you might otherwise expect?
It was. It definitely was. I mean, we had a hint, but we didn't know the degree to which that would be true over the years. It's turned out to be significantly more important to us than we had originally thought. We thought it was it's going to be certainly an upper middle income customer. Turned out to be better than that.
Why?
Well, you know, Steve, if you think about the people who own and run businesses, they're at the top end of the demographic scale in just about every community in the country, in every community in the world, for that matter. And so they not only have more discretionary money that they're spending, but they also are spending money on their business, and oftentimes spending it on things that they sell in their business, spending it on things that they consume in their business, like office supplies and toilet paper for their restrooms and things like that.
Yeah.
So you've got an approach to that customer that is almost three-pronged. You're supplying goods for sale in their business, goods for consumption in their business, and products for personal consumption for their daily living.
You know, Jim, as we sit here today, and I'm citing these stats as I did in my opening today, that Costco is the second largest retailer in the U.S., the seventh largest retailer on the entire planet. I mean, did you ever imagine a ride like the one you've been on for the last few decades?
Well, we have been very, very fortunate. And to answer your question more directly, no, I had no idea. You know, when we did our original business plan and we raised the money through friends and acquaintances, we told them that we thought we could eventually grow to about 12 of these businesses and that we could make about a 3% return to them in profitability. And that was the way we raised the money with the shareholders.
So you're not a great financial analyst,
yes.
I see.
Well,
a little short in that category.
Over the years, my partner, Jeff Brotman, has always said that he knew all along that we were going to be that successful. It was my lack of vision at that time that I didn't recognize that was going to happen.
Because the trick, I imagine, at least in the beginning, was you needed a big chunk of capital to supply stores of this size and magnitude, right? I mean, that goes without saying, I imagine.
Of course. I mean, we had to, obviously, and you have to start generating some volume. We like to turn our inventory faster than we have to pay for it. So in truth, in our high-volume buildings, our accounts payable factor, we've sold the merchandise 1.5 times before we have to pay the supplier for it. So that's a good – not a lot of need for working capital because we're able to turn the inventory so fast.
What's it like to be on a ride like this? I mean, everybody would love to be in your shoes for a couple of days to experience that kind of success. I mean, what a terrific ride.
Well, you know, all of us, if you got to – the first thing you have to understand is that this is not a one-man gang, that – it's an organization, and if you hire good people and pay them good jobs and provide good careers, you're going to get good things happening in your business. And that's exactly what happened with us. I mean, we have an executive committee in our company of 17 people, and I think the average number of years they've been with us, if we totaled them all up, is something like 27, 28
wow.
years. So they've been along, and they take personal pride in what we all have accomplished there. So we're enthusiastic about it. We love the business.
So that philosophy goes right back to the beginning of the chain then. You wanted to treat your people, pay them well, the insurance end of it, that came right from the start.
We started out that way. We felt that it was important that we get good people in our organization and that we were going to get better productivity. We believed in that completely.
Again, our guest, Costco co-founder Jim Senegal. You know, Jim, you offer food products, you offer gasoline. Other warehouse businesses didn't do that. At least they weren't doing it when you guys first came along. Why did you go in that direction? What brought you there?
Well, you know, we have always looked for new categories of merchandise to bring our members.
Mm-hmm.
We constantly are looking at things that we think can save them money. And, you know, when we look at something new like hearing aid centers, we ask ourselves the question, you know, we ask three questions, really. We say, can we do it well? Can we save our customers money and bring them value? And are we going to be able to be able to do it profitably? And if the answer is yes to those three questions, then we're prepared to try any type of category of goods or service for our members. That's part of what I said to you earlier, that you have to constantly be bringing new and better things to the customers. Otherwise, you get a little boring.
You know, to what extent are you constantly surveying your members, Jim, to get a feel for the kinds of products they might be interested in? Because certainly it's more than just a gut feeling, isn't it?
Well, first of all, our buyers are very professional. I mean, these are people who really know and understand their job, and they're on top of the marketplace, and they know what's happening relative to new goods on a continual basis. But in addition to that, we have a box at the front of our building. You may have seen it, Steve, when you walk out, and it says, tell us what you think. And customers write us messages all the time requesting products, telling us things they think we should carry. They'll tell us about something that we had that we no longer have and they want us to get it back.
Yeah.
We read those. Every member of the management team and the buying team reads those things every single day. We print them out every day. Each location is responsible to key punch it in on a computer and it comes out on a printout.
Here's my message. Don't move your products around. You move something, and I'm like all over the store looking for it.
Well, you know,
we hear that
all the time.
I bet you do.
But that's part of exposing categories of goods. Oftentimes we find that we bring the housewares department out into the center of the building, and people start to see products they haven't seen and haven't noticed for months.
Right. Right. You know, I noticed that you've obviously earned a lot of money, but your base pay, well, at least the last time I looked, was just $350,000, which is hardly on the high end compared to other CEOs of major corporations. Why the low base pay for Jim Senegal?
Well, you don't have to have any benefit dinners for me. I've been well rewarded as the founder of this company. And so I think it's appropriate that my pay be a certain multiple of what the top people make that are working on a sales floor. Now, I'm retired now, as you know. But at that point, your number is right. It was $350,000, I think, for probably about 10 or 12 years at the same rate. I think it was appropriate. My reward has been in the increased value of the stock.
What was your overall pay? Is that number public?
Generally is public, although they have introduced new ways of reporting that on an ongoing basis. But with the bonus that I received and with some stock awards that I received, I think it probably came into close to $2 million.
But still, given the size of Costco, that doesn't strike me as being commensurate with what other CEOs of major multinational corporations make.
I think it was very appropriate. I think that my value as a shareholder was significantly greater, and that was more important to me. Driving the value for all shareholders was an extraordinarily important thing relative to the image of our company.
So you wanted to make a point through your own pay. You were making a statement right there.
Sure. I mean, the fact of the matter is that no one person is 1,000 times more important than the people that are working on the sales floor. And so that works for us. May not work for other people, but it works for us. And it's a pretty constant thing that we try to keep an eye on.
I was going to say there's a bunch of CEOs around this country who might not agree with what you just said, or apparently don't, because they're making a whole lot more than that.
Well, but, you know, you have to look at their – out of fairness, you have to look at their equity position in their companies as well. I mean, that's that is a significant factor. And so when somebody is working to make their living as a CEO and don't have the equity position and that I share in, then it's a different story.
Just a quick question about how you got started in this business, Jim. You started in wholesale distribution by working for Saul Price at both Fed Mart and Price Club. What did you learn from those experiences before Costco came along?
Well, Saul Price was my boss. I started working for him when I was 18 and going to college. And this job put me through school at Fed Mart. And then I followed him to Price Club, and he started the Price Club. He was an extraordinarily creative guy. He was a lawyer by training, but by education, but he was a merchant, and he loved the business life. And I was questioned one time a few years ago. They were doing a story on Saul, and they said, "Gee, you worked for him for all of those years. You must have learned a lot." And my comment was, "No, that's inaccurate. I learned everything." That's how highly I regarded this person. He was a fantastic mentor to me, and clearly I don't know that I would have ever gotten into the retail business if I hadn't started with him working as an 18-year-old student.
Boy, what a lucky break.
Yeah, how lucky am I to have found somebody like that who could influence not just my life but the lives of a lot of people at that point in time. There's some other very significant business people who have done well as a result of the training that we all received from Saul.
Do you miss being an active, hands-on, daily, day-in and day-out CEO?
Sure. I mean, it's difficult. You know, I'm now 78 years old, and so having done this all my life, as you can imagine, from 18 years old, that's 60 years I've been doing this type of thing in different forms, obviously. I wasn't always a boss.
Yeah.
But sure, I miss it. I love the business. But there's a particular point in time when it's not all about you. It's got to be about the succession process in a company. And I wouldn't feel very good if it was time for me to go for health reasons or some other reason, and the company wasn't in the proper hands. And it's in the proper hands of management now.
What is the future growth of Costco? Where are you guys going right now?
Well, as long as we're successful, we'll continue to open Costcos. As long as we can find markets where we think that we can do a good job and where we can be successful and prosper, we're going to continue to open. And so I don't think it would be unusual to see us open 30 to 35 new Costcos every year.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Probably 20 to 25 of those in the U.S. and the balance of them on an international basis.
That was my next question. Yeah, are you growing more internationally than domestically? But it sounds like not. The focus is still here.
Well, there won't be any country that will grow as fast as the U.S., and the U.S. is still going to be a major portion of our growth for the next 8 or 10 years. But other markets like Japan and like Australia and Western Europe will continue to be very important targets for us.
Your house brand is named Kirkland. Where did that name come from?
Well, our home office was in Kirkland, Washington.
Ah, okay.
And
I've always wondered.
We were looking for a name that we could get cleared for all of the different product categories that we had and in all the countries where we did business. And so Kirkland seemed to fill the bill, and we decided on it. And promptly then, after we named our private label Kirkland, we moved our offices to Issaquah.
Probably a better choice to stay with Kirkland.
Yeah. Nobody can spell Issaquah. So.
Again, Jim Senegal is a 2013 International Entrepreneur of the Year. He was named that at the Block School of Management here at UMKC on Monday. Jim Senegal, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in and visiting with us.
It's my pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, should Jackson County voters approve a half-cent sales tax for translational research? We'll debate the tax tomorrow. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.